So I have to make sure I have the right band in the room, and being that this is not television, this is radio, we have to have you identify yourselves.
Yes. Hello, I'm Chris, and I sing and play guitar in The Living End.
This is a good start.
I also am in The Living End, but I don't play guitar. I play a bass, and I sing a little bit. And my name is Scott, for those of you playing at home.
For playing the game at home. And we're going to get to that bass, because at South by Southwest, I was a little scared, because I was pretty close to the stage at one moment. And it seemed like it was going to propel itself, but we'll just, you know, so you must be a very strong man, but we'll get there in a little while. So, the last time I saw you was at the Australian picnic at South by Southwest, and a friend came up to me and said, have you heard of this band? I'm like, yes, Alan, I've heard of this band. But people really went crazy. Now, am I wrong that at that time back in March, you said that there was not a release date yet for State of Emergency? Am I correct about that?
Yes, you are. We basically went over there to sort of, you know, showcase the band and showcase the album and get in front of everyone. We'd never done South by Southwest before, so we were really excited about playing. And we managed to do that. We got in front of people and got in front of the industry. And, you know, since then, obviously, we've, you know, signed with Adeline, and the album has just come out here a few weeks back. But it's been out in Australia since February. We're on to, like, single number 4 now.
I know that. That's why I asked it that way, because it, and I'm going to make sure we have our proper level, it amazes me, because I was sitting there watching you, and like I said, I've played your music for a long time, and there you are up there, and we'll get to who you are in Australia, but, you know, exactly, and so how strange was it to go there and you know, play to the kids, as they say?
Well, I really quite liked it. You know, we knew that we were in the position where we'd had our time with Warners, and we were sort of free agents, I suppose. And, you know, we've had a lot of success in Australia, but to me, the fourth album, it still feels like early days. I still feel that we're only hitting our stride as a live band and as songwriters and arrangers and in the studio and everything. So we don't mind, you know, going over there and sort of along with all the brand new bands and having to sort of prove ourselves. I love that. You know, I don't want to sort of be seen as being, you know, whatever, however many albums down the line and stuff. So it was an exciting position to be in, to be doing that, and this tour has kind of justified that as well. You know, I still feel as fresh about the band as ever.
And I'm not trying to cause a ruckus, but why do you think it's so easy? I mean, think how many if you were to count the number of Britpop bands that were at South by Southwest, and some of which we will not name any names, because I play a lot of them and I've interviewed a ton of them. But what's intriguing to me, and I want you both to talk about a little bit about this, is, you know, it's, if you're a Britpop band, it's kind of like, how fast can we sign you? And you might have 3 or 4 songs, and here you are, The Living End, and, you know, and yes, being fresh, I agree, and having, you know, had 4 albums, but talk a little bit about that.
I don't know. I think there's a hell of a lot of great stuff coming out of Britain at the moment, like over the last 5 years or whatever. There has been some really good, it's been good quality stuff. So I don't see that as a kind of, you know, a hurdle or anything like that. I just see that as a sign of the times. There just seems to be a hell of a lot of good music coming out of Britain at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess, there's nothing like, there's never more of a buzz about a band than when they're brand new, because, you know, your imagination takes over and the possibilities are endless with a new band, you know. So, of course, there's always going to be a giant buzz about all these new things coming out of a great scene like the UK.
And some of them actually do live up to it.
Yeah, some of them do, and yeah, some of them don't. I mean, we're big fans of, like, you know, the Libertines and the Arctic Monkeys and stuff, and we, you know, really think that they made great albums and stuff. But yeah, it seems that, you know, particularly like the NME and stuff, you know, they champion a band so much, it's almost like the band hasn't got a damn chance of living up to it, you know. And they end up, if they can come through with the goods and produce a good album, then I think they're okay, because they've had this steam train of hype behind them, and every band in the world kills to get that. It's just whether you can follow through with it. And I think, you know, a lot of them don't. You know, they're on the cover 1 week and then they're sort of nobody's the next. Whereas I'm kind of glad that we have a career and we have built up a following, and it'd be nice to be the new hot band on the block, but maybe not, you know.
But all kidding aside, you had, according to the stats I read, the biggest selling Australian-made top 40 single of the 90s. You've had platinum albums. You've sold and you're allowed to say this on the radio now, you've sold a shite load of records.
We have, you know, amazing, really, for, you know, for what started out as a rockabilly band from the suburbs of Melbourne, you know, and our dreams and aspirations were to fill a club in the city, you know, to get a gig at a pub in the city would be incredible for us. And we did that, then we released EPs and they sold. We got on the radio, they sold more, you know, it was this gradual snowball that ended up, we released Prisoner of Society and it's become the biggest selling single or something, and the album I think is one of the biggest selling debut albums in Australian history, you know, and it's just, we kind of, you know, I always knew that the band could relate to a lot of people, but we never expected it to explode, you know, that big at all, which is good because we were very naive, we were just doing our thing.
So, but people do spend a lot, I bet people spend a lot of time every interview trying to categorize the band. The one that I just read was punkabilly. Mm. What's punkabilly? I need another category. So could you define punkabilly for me? But all kidding aside, here you are, you know, doing the mix of things you do, and really, and we're going to get there in a second, but, you know, punkabilly.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It's, you know, I mean, obviously, you see the double bass, and, you know, there's rockabilly kind of guitar licks and a little bit of, you know, some rockabilly threads going on, a little bit of hair product. And, you know, when we first started out, we had a whole, you know, we had a whole chunk of that, and then we took a lot of the influence, like the attack and energy and stuff from punk rock, and we, you know, we loved the Clash and the Pistols and all that, so we got labelled punkabilly, which is fine, you know, but I think we've proven that there's more to the band than that, you know, there's a hell of a lot of melody and stuff going on that wasn't, you know, part of our influences, you know, like we loved the Sun Records thing, but it wasn't about beautiful chord changes, it was about the rhythm and all that sort of stuff, and we've taken influence from, you know, the Beatles and you know, people that really knew how to craft a pop song, and that's a big part of what we do. So the punkabilly tag kind of annoys us, I think. It's a bit narrow-minded, so I'm glad you don't think of us as that.
I'm laughing only because I'm about to get on a plane for LA on Monday, and I don't wear as much hair product as you do, but I'm just thinking, you're about to get on a plane after all this time on a bus, and you're going to have to give up that, you're going to have to pack all that hair product.
Yeah, I know.
No brushing your teeth on the plane. Forget about it.
Yep. Yeah, I know. Breath is going to be able to strip the paint off the walls in the airport when we land in Melbourne. I'm pretty sure about that. I feel sorry for the loved ones who are coming to the airport to pick us up. I feel sorry for them.
I know. It's not going to be a pretty sight, is it?
No, but at least we'll be safe.
Yes. Thank you for that.
On the airplane, you know.
But all kidding aside, whether it be Living End or AC/DC or Fisher Zed, one of my favorite bands, or the Hoodoo Gurus, or another favorite band of mine who I play a ton of, it's all just rock and roll that comes out of a country that really breeds rock and roll. I mean, Australia, if you think about the music that comes out of Australia, and we'll put Men at Work over here for a second, and we can put, you know, some of the, well, I could mention some of the other pop people, but I mean, it does really breed classic, good, melodic rock and roll. So many of these bands.
Yeah. Pub rock and roll. Good.
Yeah, pub rock.
Good.
Right.
Good sticky carpet, you know, beer drinking, bar.
Hair product laden.
Barroom, you know, barroom boogie woogie rock and roll. It's fantastic. It's a great, it's in our blood. It's, you can't grow up in Australia, especially throughout the 80s, you know, like when we were little kids, we weren't old enough to be going to these gigs, but, you know, they were around and they were a massive part of, like, the culture of the next generation on from us. And I'm so thankful for it. I'm so glad I had an older brother who was into AC/DC and the Angels and Rose Tattoo and Midnight Oil, because it's in my blood now, and I appreciate it so much now. It's just a great kind of heritage and a great history to have as an Aussie band, you know.
Well, just the opening riffs of all these people that we're talking about, and that's what you do too.
It's got to start strong and end strong, and, you know, hopefully everything in between is, you know, is decent as well. But yeah, the Beatles were masters of it. You know, some of the greatest intros of, you know, ever.
No, and all these good bands. So this is a question I've never gotten to ask an Australian band, and now I want to. Is the Melbourne sound different than the Sydney sound, different than the Adelaide sounds, sort of like Liverpool and Manchester and Leeds and all of that? Is there a different, the fact that you came out of where you came out of versus, you know, is there a difference there? Is there anything different in the water?
I reckon we're a very Melbourne band. I don't really know why I think that, but I think if we were from Sydney, we'd be more of a rockabilly band or something. I don't know, something about Melbourne, it's just to me, it seems just a little more diverse as far as the arts and the music scene.
Well, Melbourne's more like San Francisco, and Sydney's more like LA. And my at least when I was over there, that's what I loved both places, but that's what I got out of it.
That's exactly right, and I just feel like because Melbourne's such a multicultural city as well, that kind of shows what the music trend is like in Melbourne. It's very kind of, you know, there's not a lot of...
You don't have the beach to just kind of blow your mind on quite the same way.
No, not unless you jump in a car and drive for an hour.
Right.
But then, like, Perth is over the complete other side of the country and right. has an amazing quality of bands
right.
coming out of Perth. There's so many good ones that have come out of Perth. And I think it's because they have such a hunger that they have to be the best they possibly can to break out and to get to the other side of the country, to the East Coast, where there's so many more gigs you can do. It's, you know, I think it's a great thing for Perth, you know. The isolation is a bittersweet thing for them because there's been so many good bands come out of there.
So, speaking, okay, we did South by Southwest, but I didn't even realize you were on the Warped Tour. And I've talked to, and I don't play a lot of Warped, to be honest. I don't play very many Warped Tour bands. There's a couple that have slipped their way in, and there's some oldsters that found their way in this year. So the kids could say, oh my God, who's Joan Jett? You know, or whoever it is. But what was that? I mean, it must have been good for you, but it must have been strange too.
Yeah, the first day, it was, remember, you know, we rolled up and there was a band called Against Me that were playing,
yes.
who were fantastic,
they
actually.
Are good.
But I didn't, you know, I couldn't see them properly. I could only hear them, and I saw the crowd getting into them, and they sounded so heavy and so kind of like full on. And I just remember thinking, I don't think we're going to go down too well this year. I mean, the musical climate has changed so much, and I just thought, I think we're going to get eaten alive, which was probably a great way to go into it, because when we hit the stage, we came out with all guns blazing. And at the end of the tour, it was the exact reverse of that. You know, we went down a treat. The kids were loving it because we were different to the rest of the bands. All the other bands were so nice and gracious towards us, and I think they all found, you know, it's like a breath of fresh air. So
did they know who you were? The other bands, were they aware that... You know, they, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but they're, you know, they're the new showcasing bands that have sold 10,000 albums, and here you guys are, and, you know.
Yeah, there was a nice kind of, you know, when we got there was all this sort of talk, oh, look, the Living End are arriving today, you know, it made us feel a little bit more welcome, and, you know, because the tour was already up and running when we got on the tour.
Right.
So we had to, we were the kind of, you know, we were the last ones to join the party, sort of, you know, and you never know how you're going to fit in, but... It was great. It was such a worthwhile tour for us to do.
But it is like a carnival, and I read somewhere you found your way as part of it to the Playboy Mansion.
Yep. Yeah, well, that was...
I read that, and that might be true.
That had nothing at all to do with Warped Tour. That was, just like a little bonus adventure.
Was it a bad adventure? Was it terrible? Was it painful?
No.
Yeah, well, you know, the Playboy Mansion, it's a bit of a bummer, you know, to go there, and it was...
Depressing moment in your life, I'm sure.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. But it was all very innocent. Yeah. It was all very innocent. It was a wonderful experience. It really was. It's been a great tour, and things like that have just made this tour stand out. And I've, you know, we're the envy of many of our friends, I'm sure. You know, it's a lifelong dream for any man, I think, to get to the Playboy Mansion, you know, and we did it. It was awesome.
Life's over,
that's it.
That's it. Goodbye, see ya. We quit.
But in all honesty, you know, it was cool, but it was, it's just, you know, beautiful gardens, beautiful house and all that sort of stuff, but, you know.
It is what it is. Yeah, I know. It's kind of like going to Disneyland, only the mature version.
Yeah. R-rated Disneyland. That's what it was like.
Right. Yeah, R-rated Disneyland. Okay, let's sell some records, shall we? Your producer, Nick, does he get the live sound better on record than anybody else you've worked with? Because I know that you said in another interview, it takes him a little while to get things done.
Yeah, he's not... You know, he's not the fastest worker in the world, but he's very precise, and that's probably a good thing. You know, like we're very adamant to try and make sure that we sound on record like we do live. Never happens. It's really tough.
Yeah.
And it is kind of, it's a separate kind of thing, but he's very meticulous, and it's probably a good thing.
Does he mic you very well?
He does.
Good job of miking you.
He does.
This is important.
We went through an enormous ordeal to record that bass. We built a room within a room out of basically anything we could find that would block sound out. That was literally big enough for me and my bass.
And that's big.
And I spent weeks and weeks and weeks in that room. I couldn't even really move in there any further than to play. And yeah, it was crazy. I remember building it thinking, I can't believe this is happening. I hope it doesn't work so we can just pull it down and I can get some fresh air. But yeah, we went to a lot of, like, Nick's great at improvising with ideas as far as, you know, miking and stuff. We had trouble getting a good drum sound in the beginning in the studio. So we ended up moving the drums out into the lounge room. And one of the best sounding mics that he had on the drum kits was up the other end, was up the back of the hallway. Like, he's just great at finding these little, you know, opportunities to make good sounds that are definitely not textbook kind of things.
And we talked about this earlier in the interview. This was done analog. This was done the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, 2-inch tape.
And the decision for that was because...
Because Nick loves it, and you know, there's obviously a quality and a warmth that the tape has that created the debate whether digital can replicate that or whatever. And Nick's always worked on tape. He even edits 2-inch tape. He still gets there on the tape machine with a razor blade, cutting and splicing and sticking it back together with tape. And yeah.
Let's talk about the single. This first single here, What's On Your Radio, because radio here, as you know, getting What's On Your Radio on the radio in this country, it's people, for better or for worse, hopefully for better, like me, that make these kind of records here in this country. You know, and I get the email saying, "Oh, you're playing The Living End," and I write back and say, "Yes, for years, but thank you for the push." But, you know, over in Australia, the Triple J's of the world, are these amazing radio stations, are they really that different than what you've heard here?
Are the radio stations in Australia different?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Triple J's pretty unique. They kind of just, you know, they'll just pluck a band from obscurity and play it. And
they'll make them.
They can make them, you know. And it's a really valuable thing. And they're very diverse, you know. It's like you hear rock, hip-hop. Blues, jazz, everything on the one station. And
on one big corporate-owned station, too.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, a little teeny station.
No. It's, you know, it's the ABC. And they do a lot for young bands. And, yeah, they've been great supporters of us. And, yeah, it's just there's not enough stations like that in Australia. Some of the other ones are a bit dicey. They're kind of struggling to... think outside the square, I suppose. You know, they get stuck in a rut and it's more about football and sport than it is about music. And they certainly don't put CDs in CD players. It's just pressing buttons and playlists and stuff. It's a little bland.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really bad. I don't have a hard drive in my studio. I have 2 turntables and 3 CD players and a DAT machine. I have a hard drive for the spots I play, but I don't have the opportunity to pull anything off a playlist, so I just have to wing it. Yeah. Kind of scary.
Kind of scary,
isn't it? But you have to do it.
Yeah.
But you've also given your fans some different songs to chew on, like Order of the Day. Now, Nick didn't bring, like, Phil Spector's shotgun into the studio for that one, did he?
No, that was actually added as we were recording. You know, it used to have a completely different start, but I just like the idea of having that beat on one of our albums. I just figure you've got to do it. You know, you've got to pay tribute to the mad Afro'd genius up on Murder Charges.
You have over 76,000 friends on MySpace. That's a lot of friends.
Can I name them for you?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I changed my question this morning. My usual question is, who are your favorite friends? But all kidding aside, you know, that is a lot of friends to have a beer with every night. Did you ever think it was going to, that when you were starting out and this stuff did not exist, did you ever think that it was going to be such an important way to build fans and, you know, and I mean, because 76,000 people, you have to play a lot of pubs to meet that many friends. So
the whole MySpace thing is completely bizarre. I remember I first heard about it a couple of years ago when we were in the States and we had this band out on tour called the Lost City Angels from Boston. And the singer from that band was, they were getting lots of people down to the gigs. And he told me about MySpace. He said, you put your music up there, you can put all your dates up there, you can actually physically get in touch with people. He explained the whole thing to me and I just thought,
what is this?
Well, that sounds like a hell of a lot of work to go do, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then... And so we checked it out, and over the years, yeah, it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's
and
beyond bigger. Massive.
Yeah. See, we come from the school where we used to just put flyers on people's windows and stuff and get them to the show and that, but our manager was a big believer in MySpace, and, you know, she's been, like, really pushing this, what we got to do. So we try and, you know, connect with people, and you got to move with the times.
Absolutely. So speaking of moving with the times, we didn't fill out an hour, and we could chat for an hour, but I've got something a little more fun to do, and I've done this with over 100 bands in the past year and a half. We do a thing called a musical sandwich, and you notice I didn't ask you your influences, because nobody needs another, so when you were young, what did you listen to? So what we do is we build a sandwich. We take two of your songs as the bread, and then I want you to pick other music from any other artist you've always wanted to play in between, and I will play it for you exactly as you asked for it, so you get to play DJ.
I'm going with track one, Till the End.
Okay.
Yeah, it just seems like a good, solid piece of bread to me.
Yeah, it's well baked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I quite like the song, We Want More. Look, I'll have to pick a Clash song, I suppose, you know. Don't hear them on the radio enough. Maybe Safe European Home.
There you go.
There you go.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
You want to go back and forth on a few?
Sure. I'm going to pick The Meat in the Sandwich. And it's got to be AC/DC. And it's got to be Back in Black. If it's going to be a slab of meat in a sandwich, if it was to pick my favourite AC/DC song, I would have chosen Can I Sit Next to You, Girl. But if we're talking about a musical sandwich here, I want a dirty, great big piece of beef in the middle of it.
That would be, Back in Black is definitely beef.
You spoke about the Hoodoo Gurus before, and we've had the pleasure of recording a track for a tribute album. A little while ago, we did. They did a tribute to Stone Age Romeos, and we played a track called Leilani. And we've met Brad Shepherd a few times, and he's a really nice guy. So let's play a Guru's track. Maybe, a thousand miles away.
I have all the Australian import stuff available.
Yeah. Well, let's go that one. That's how we feel.
Okay, I'm gonna go for an Elvis Costello song. I'm thinking Peace, Love, and Understanding, or Chelsea. Peace, Love, and Understanding.
Great track.
But let's play some Graham Parker.
I know, people, that's one of those lost things. He's still making records.
He's just incredible. Like, amazing lyricist, killer singer.
Yeah.
Just brilliant. I don't know. Either You Can't Be Too Strong or Discovering Japan.
Oh, those both kick.
They both kick.
Yeah.
Let's go Discovering Japan.
And, all right, now we're getting very classic English here, so I'm getting on a plane and I'm flying a long way away, and I'm going back a little bit in time as well, and I'm going to Glen Campbell's house, and I'm getting Wichita Lineman out of his collection of recordings and putting that on. What's halfway between Glen Campbell and We Want More?
Jesus, I don't know.
Would it be Honey Don't?